Thanks for listening to AM 620 KTOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Now, coming to you live from the banks of the Willamette River, it's Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman.
You've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
Online at 620KTOJ.com and on the air at AM 620 KTOJ.
I want you to get up right now and go to the window and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman, and we have been getting mad as hell today, fired up on a beautiful Portland Saturday. I don't know where my head is. AM 620 KPOJ is the station. We are Portland's one and only progressive talk station. Thank God for it. We're talking about, God, I don't even remember anymore. We're talking about dancing at the revolution. We're talking about the possibility of a third party. Just had a really powerful comment from a woman. Her name was Valerie, and she was saying, no, man, we can't afford to get another crazy in there. If we get another lunatic like George Bush, someone like Michelle Bachmann, it'll break her. It'll break her family. That's why I'm frightened to even broach a conversation like this. Coming up, it's going to be Al Nowakowski, a roving reporter in the Windy City who's did a really beautiful report on some people that are taking a stand at B of A. Out in Aurora, Illinois. He's going to be here to tell us about that. But we're going to finish up our calls. People appreciate you waiting through the break. Sharon in Sunset Beach, California. Is that true?
Hello?
Sharon, are you listening from Sunset Beach, California?
Yes, I'm in Orange County, California.
Oh, welcome to Mad as Hell in America. We're up here in Portland, Oregon.
Well, you know, when you get desperate for progressive radio, you search it till you find it, and I guess I found it.
You found it. Orange County's tough. What's on your mind, Sharon?
Well, a couple of things. The first thing, you mentioned, how do we persuade Obama to, you know, not give in? And what the only thing that I think can work is a massive postcard writing campaign. Not letters, because letters get held up in security. Postcards can go right through. And if, you know, thousands of postcards come in, preferably on colored cardstocks, that it kind of stands out, I think that's going to have it make an impression.
Yeah.
I don't think phone calls work because there's only so many calls that they can take. But if they pull out their mailbags and it's full of postcards, I think that might start having an impression.
Well, maybe that's a good start. What about the idea of a third party? I mean, would you endorse it, or do we just keep making the same old argument, well, we'll just split the liberal vote in this country and we'll get a whack job?
I think spreading the liberal vote is a third party is just going to dilute. It's not going to change the history. I mean, we've seen from history what happens with a third party.
Well, it's how Clinton got in, right? Remember? Ross Perot came in and took votes away from George Herbert Walker Bush.
Well,
and that's how Clinton got in. So we don't want to make that mistake. But, man, I am so tired of voting for this compromise, this diluted principle. Sharon,
another quick comment. As long as there is money in politics, it doesn't matter which party, they are influenced by money, period. And the only thing that I can see is if Obama gets in next time again, it's just going to delay the revolution. If a Republican gets in, it's going to speed it up because we're going to get it even more mad as hell.
See, well, that might be a good thing, Sharon. Thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it. That was kind of my point to the other caller. You know, it was okay, so we get a whack job in there, and then we're forced into action. No more false sense of security. No more lulled to sleep. Let's go to Patrick. I don't know what town you're in. Welcome to Mad as Hell in America, Patrick. What's on your mind?
Hi. Yeah, I enjoy your show today, Adam. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for saying so, and thanks for calling.
And I'm mad as hell also. In fact, I've been mad since December when he brokered away part of Social Security in that tax rate.
In the payroll tax. We saw it coming, didn't
right.
we? I mean,
wow.
And it was a 2%. He also gave tax breaks to the top 2%, right? I mean, we saw it. And what it was a similar scenario. These false hostage. They held the START treaty hostage, right? They held Don't Ask, Don't Tell hostage. They held the defense authorization hostage. I mean, you know, that's what these guys do. Why don't we stand up and spit in their face a little bit?
Okay, well, I have a possible solution to our dilemma here.
Go for it.
I think we should primary him. But nobody seems to, they mention it a little bit, but there's plenty of time to primary him.
You mean primary, to issue a primary challenge. Who would that be? Russ Feingold.
Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders. Alan Grayson. Dennis Kucinich.
Alan Grayson is
It'd
a good
be great
idea.
Because Alan he could Grayson. Speak Republican right to their face.
Yeah, Alan Grayson. Of all the people, I thought about Russ Feingold. I thought about, you know, Kucinich already tried it, kind of in his own way. I think Alan Grayson is a great idea, Patrick. That is an excellent suggestion. Thanks so much for the call. I really appreciate it. Alan Grayson issuing a primary challenge to Obama in 2012 to force a new conversation on the Democratic Party, the National Democratic Party. Let's go to Donald. Donald in Eugene, welcome to Mattis, Allen America. What's up, Donald?
Yes, I'm old enough to have listened to President Roosevelt myself, and I'm an African-American, and I've seen a lot of things, too. And I don't know if there'll be a third party or not. I will not vote for this person.
You will not vote for President Obama?
Absolutely not. He's a terrible disappointment in my view. And indeed, it was principle during the 60s that stopped the war and ended legal segregation in this country for a lot of people, incidentally, other than black people. And I haven't seen much principle coming out of this White House.
I sure haven't seen much principle coming out of the White House.
I haven't seen any standing up either. There were people in the 60s who literally gave their lives to this country to make it a better place for everybody. And I haven't seen anything close to that.
I haven't either, and I keep waiting for it.
Well, it should be coming out of the White House. He had a lot of big talk. I don't see any backing it up.
I don't either, Donald, and it's making me mad as hell. And that's what's making me even, you know, start this conversation. This is a tricky conversation to start, talking about a third party in this country.
We wouldn't be talking about a third party if the president had led this party in a direction that was productive.
I couldn't agree more. Donald, thanks so much for the call. We're going to go to Dennis. Dennis, in Portland. Welcome to Mattis, Helen, America. What's up, Dennis?
Thank you. First, let me say I'm really grateful to hear you work on the air. It's wonderful to have you speaking.
Thank you very much. Thanks for saying so.
Okay. I was in the 60s, and the free speech movement in Berkeley was essentially just that. I mean, most of us then didn't have a lot to lose, but we knew we needed to keep free speech. We knew we needed a platform to speak. But now, with the media the way it is, we really, no matter where we go to speak, with the exception of shows like yours and some others, we're at a real disadvantage. I think we need a frontal attack on the media, for one thing, to start, and the courts, to get at the truth. Now, someone mentioned the Justice Party a little while ago. I don't know about a third party, but my guess is we have a really good, strong Democratic Party, only they're not the ones in power right now. If we get people like Kennedy Jr., maybe Ronnie Reagan Jr., you know, he's purple. And by the way, as far as dancing at revolutions, you know, he's a dancer.
Yeah, he is a dancer, and we need lots of them. We need some radical, hard-hitting dancers at this revolution, having fun, making social change, celebrating, because it's we celebrate who we are that way. We celebrate the best in us. We like I said, we don't dissent because we hate the way things are. We dissent because we know we love the way we know things could be. Dennis, thanks so much
That's
for
true.
The call. I really appreciate
My pleasure.
It.
Thank you.
Keep on listening and keep up the faith, man. We're going to keep fighting. So we are through our calls. What an exciting hour we had. So we're going to split this next guest between the end of this hour and this segment and the beginning of the incoming segment, segment two. What's interesting about Al Nowakowski is that he not only is he our roving reporter in the Windy City, he is someone who is really committed to getting out there and giving the people who are taking the direct action, the people that are out there in the street, really doing what we're talking about on this show, giving them voice. And then I try with this show to give them a microphone, some kind of amplification. And that's what Al has for us today. Al Nowakowski, a roving reporter in the Windy City. Welcome to Mattis, Helen America. It's always great to have you.
Thanks a lot, boss. You know, I wish I could say I was mad as hell in the Midwest today, but it's so beautiful out. I think I started out this morning maybe pleasantly peeved, but I'll tell you, what great conversation today. Some great callers, and you got me riled up again, boss.
Wow, well, that's good. We got you mad as hell in the Midwest. It's beautiful here, and it is hard to be mad as hell when it's beautiful, but I don't know how about you, but... this Social Security, Medicare leak, this leaking nonsense that they do, which is really just like a weather balloon or a it's letting us know it's coming, so brace yourselves. It just really ticked me off, and it just made me think about how barren the landscape is. I don't know what your reaction is.
It's, you know, to say it's troublesome is a huge understatement. I mean, this Social Security and Medicare, aside from being, you know, by far the most popular programs in the history of this country are really the bedrock of our modern society. I mean, when you look at things like the incidence of elderly poverty dropping following the introduction of Medicare in the 60s, I mean, this is the right thing to do. And for them, you know, in face of tax cuts for the top 2%, to say we're going to take it from the least among us, it's offensive on too many levels, Adam.
I mean, this is our social safety net. I mean, people don't remember. I'm too young to remember, but I know what it would be like, and I remember the stories of what it was like before there was Social Security, when our seniors were, you know, living on fixed incomes and food stamps and eating dog food and living and dying in loneliness and despair. And
it's the elderly poorhouses. I'm sure that market, the booming market again, right?
We're
going to have the return of the elderly poorhouses, well, no doubt.
And they'll be privatized, no doubt about that, right?
I mean,
and remember why they want Social Security in particular. There's a huge tranche of money there, and they want to get that money. They want to bang open that safe, and they want to give it to the criminals who screwed up the economy in the first place so they can invent some scheme to steal it on Wall Street. That's what's going on. So we've talked out our minute here, but when we come back, why don't you set up a little bit for our listeners the clip that you've got for us. We'll reset it at the top of the next segment, but we got a couple minutes, so tell us what have you got going there in Aurora?
Well, I visited with some real middle-class fighters yesterday, Adam, and these are people who aren't rolling over on these proposed cuts to our social safety net. I joined with the Northern Illinois Jobs with Justice Action yesterday, and Aurora is the second largest city in Illinois after Chicago. It's about an hour west of Chicago. They're a partisan group familiar with Jobs with Justice. They've been around since the late 80s. They're a coalition of community activists,
union-based
groups, labor unions, student activists, and they're all fighting for working Americans. They have chapters in 46 cities and 24 states. But the Illinois Jobs with Justice, they're a group that are just forming now, though they're a collection of groups that have been in the area. But every month in the release of unemployment numbers, Jobs with Justice has a public action to bring attention to the unemployed and certainly the underemployed in our country.
And what were it, 9.2%?
Yeah, that was the numbers that came out yesterday, and a lot of people say they don't reflect the state of employment in this country.
Right, that they actually underreport the truth. We're talking to Al Nowakowski, our roving reporter in the Windy City of Chicago. He's got a terrific report, a really sweet but hard-hitting report from Aurora, Illinois, for people who are doing the dance in the streets that we're talking about. Erin DeRamus is back from her flotilla. She will be here with us. We have a great hour, and the third hour is going to be a lot of fun. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America. We'll be right back. And secretly stern as they speak. Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station, and thank goodness for it. Al Nowakowski is our guest in and from and around the Windy City of Chicago. Al, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here, boss.
All right, so give us a quick setup on this piece. Reset it for us, and then we're going to roll it.
Well, the action took place at a pretty busy intersection in Aurora, just outside a Bank of America branch. And again, Jobs with Justice, Northern Illinois Jobs with Justice, got together on the release of unemployment numbers to put a little public action, put a little street heat out there. And I spoke with quite a few of the attendees, and that's what you're going to hear.
All right, let's roll it. This is in Aurora, Illinois, at a Bank of America.
When dust storms are sailing and crops they are failing, I'm a jolly banker, jolly banker. Charlie Baker am I. I'll pick up your shortage and bring down your mortgage, singing I'm a jolly banker, Bank of America am I.
My name is Mary Shusgreen. I'm on the steering committee of Northern Illinois Jobs with Justice. We began feeling that the unemployment situation in the country was really at a crisis. I've got lots of foreclosed homes in my own neighborhood, and I know so many people who are unemployed or underemployed. And meanwhile, I see big banks who caused this economic crash being rewarded.
My name is Hale Landis. I'm a member of local IBEW, Local 134 in Cook County, Illinois, and vice chairman of the Wheatland Township Democrats in Will County, Illinois.
What do you want BOA to hear from you? I mean, what do you want to tell them?
I want to tell them that we're going to pull our money out of their banks and out of the other big banks. We need to use our local credit unions, support our neighborhood credit unions, our work credit unions. This is ridiculous. They're not lending money. They take big bonuses and they take government handouts. You know, that's welfare for the banks. They were happy to have it, but they don't want to share it.
I'm Steve Brizowitz. I'm here with Jobs for Justice, and we need jobs now. It's the release of the unemployment numbers is the occasion for this demonstration, and it's been dismal, as everybody knows. 9.2% unemployment. When we cut government funding, we're cutting government jobs, we're cutting funding from people who can least afford it, and reducing demand. You know, cutting the government budget to create jobs, it's like running against the wall and hoping one day you'll be able to pass through it. It's just not going to work.
My name is Rosemary, and I feel that the banks have taken our money and not paying their share, not paying their taxes.
And right now you feel like the banks or the corporations aren't pulling their weight?
Oh, no way.
But it's upsetting enough. It's been upsetting enough for you to get you out here today.
Well, obviously.
It's a beautiful day, isn't it?
But. It is, I know. Well, you know, we're seniors, and we have kids in their 50s, and we have college kids, grandchildren, who won't be able to find jobs. So it really is basically jobs. But it's all related.
I am Ben. I'm a former Democratic precinct committeeman, former candidate for the Oswego Village Board of Trustees, and I am here today to stand up with Jobs of Justice, because Jobs with Justice is standing up for the American working person.
We need to invest in American students again. We need to invest in our senior citizens again. We need to invest in healthcare again. We need to invest in our infrastructure again. We need to bring back these things that make an economy grow, and we need to recognize that wealthy people do not create great economies. Wealthy people are the result of great economies.
I'm Dirk Inger. I'm proud to be a union iron worker and from the middle class of America, but I'm also a county board member over here in the Jason County of DuPage County here. It's the third richest county in the country, as everybody knows. It also has a budget of six states. Over $460 million. And my problem is one that sits on the Human Services Committee, is to see that this federal government cuts 17% from the grant programs and from the social programs for our needy and for our seniors. You got to remember, when you talk about that kind of a cut, 17% to social programs in this country only eat up 3% of the federal budget. And the Congressional Budget Office even said for every dollar, for every grant dollar given out by the federal government, saves taxpayers $3. So why would you even look at a program like that? We're the middle class, aren't we? And we're a dying breed in this country, it's sad to say.
We're too big to fail. I'm a jolly banker, Bank of America, am I? I'm a jolly banker, Bank of America, am I? I'm a jolly banker, Bank of America.
That was a report from Al Nowakowski in the Windy City of Chicago. Took a trip to Aurora, Illinois. People protesting at a Bank of America Jobs with Justice newly formed there in Aurora. Al, thanks so much for that report. I noticed that there was a lot of support. People honking,
oh, yeah.
A lot of noise. You got to have a funny story. We got about 2.5 minutes left in the segment. But tell us, there's kind of an addendum to your report. Tell us that.
Well, you know, I've participated in these kind of visibility actions before, certainly, and you know, you'll always have some yahoo who either wants to flip you off or tell you where to get off. Not the case. Lots of support. But later in the protest, I noticed one fella who I hadn't seen before, and I went up to talk to him. He had a sign already. And I asked him how he heard about it. Turns out he was just driving home. He passed by the signs. He told me he went home, put the pork chops back in the fridge, and came back and joined the action. So I saw him. He had already had a pen in his hand. So, you know, you think that, that these kind of things don't have an impact. I saw firsthand how it had an impact on another fellow from the area who just, you know, compelled to come and join us because he liked the way he liked the signs. Basically.
He liked the dance. He liked the dance.
He liked the dance.
That's exactly what I said at the end of the monologue. When you show up, just be sure to dance. You know, that's the only way. You can come any way you want. Just when you get there, you got to start dancing right away. I loved it. I love what that one person said. He sounded like a kid, pretty young, saying, you know, wealthy people don't drive economies. They're the beneficiaries of a successful economy.
Another quick note about that fellow. That fellow is Ben, and he said he ran for the Oswego, a local suburb here, board.
That's not Lake Oswego.
He ran for office at age 19. He's 21 years old.
I thought he was a kid.
So there are, you know, there's some amazing people out here. And again, you don't really hear about them in the mainstream media much, do you? So I think it's really important. You know, you can see the impact of talking to your neighbors, talking to people who you normally wouldn't, and you never know what those ripples are going to bring about.
Al Nowakowski in the Windy City of Chicago, thanks so much for that report. Totally consistent with the theme of the show and everything we've been talking about. That's the dance. You are the dance, Al. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome, boss.
When we come back, we're with Erin DeRamis. I'm saying it right. Erin DeRamis is here. She's back from her flotilla trip to Gaza and has lots of interesting stories to tell. The Israelis took a slightly different approach this time, a little less direct, but equally thwarting, we should say. When we come back, Erin DeRamis is here. This is Mad as Hell in America. Hold on.
Our paperwork is in order. We've been inspected. We've had surveyors. This is seaworthy. There's no problem.
They told me you have made observations. You are not seaworthy.
They could call. They could call Delaware and talk to the officials there that this is documented in Delaware. The paperwork is in order.
Follow the law.
I am following the law.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. That was audio tape. Live, well, not live, but it was recorded live on board the Audacity of Hope, which was the American contribution to a flotilla to Gaza. People who have a home by the sea, but in Gaza, unfortunately, it is now still a prison by the sea, guarded by a very powerful Israeli army. Our guest is a returning guest. Her name is Erin DeRamis. She is a local activist, she smiles when I call her an activist. I think of her as an activist. She's also an acupuncturist and an alternative healer here in Portland, Oregon. She recently returned from just, what, when did you get back? She just got back Thursday night from a trip to Israel. A trip to Gaza where they were attempting to break the blockade.
We went to Greece, and we were trying to get to Gaza.
Yeah, they wanted to go to Gaza. They stopped over in Greece. The goal was to get to Gaza to break the blockade that Israel has against Gaza and deliver letters and humanitarian aid. And it was also very much about taking a political stand and standing, for human rights and against the Israeli oppression of the Palestinian people in Gaza and the West Bank. That was a long introduction. Erin DeRamis, welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
I was thrilled when I heard that you came back. You seem well and healthy and tan, so I'm glad that you're safe. I definitely was worried about you and Hetty. Okay, this is quite a trip. You left the day after our last interview on a flotilla trip to Gaza. Tell us what you were doing and then what your goals were and then take us through what happened.
Okay. So I was part of the U.S. boat, the Audacity of Hope, that was going to be part of the Freedom Flotilla. They call it two, but there's been a few before. But it was the next one after the last one that most people know about from last year.
So let's just stop there. The one that was in 2009 was the one.
10.
Was it 10?
Yeah.
Was in 2010 was the one in which Israeli soldiers boarded the ship. 9 people ended up being killed.
Yes.
And so this was a very brave mission on your part to go back. We'll talk about that in a minute. But okay, so just so people know the background. So this is the second attempt to bring a peaceful flotilla to challenge the blockade of Gaza by the Israeli government. Go on.
Yes. And so what we hope to do is join with about 10 other boats somewhere in the ocean at a certain meeting point and together challenge the blockade that Israel has imposed upon Gaza for the last few years.
In the ocean.
In the ocean.
Right.
Yes. And so we arrived in Greece. I think I arrived on Tuesday, the 20-something.
Who knows?
Yeah, the last few weeks, you know, so it's just going to be one long day.
Right.
But I arrived there and, you know, spirits were good. We were waiting for everybody to come in, kind of meet everyone. Half of us had gone to New York before for a press conference to talk about our plans and get people involved and aware of what we were doing. So we arrive in Greece and you can already tell that there's some political climate change there.
In Greece.
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot going on themselves.
Yes, they do.
There's riots and their economy is on bust. And I think that the banker lead-in was just perfect because that's what has screwed Greece over so much.
Yeah, that's
right. And
that's
why they're in such economic dire straits right now. But so, yeah, we arrived and, you know, our organizers had already been there for a week or so, some even as long as a month, trying to get the boat ready, the crew prepared. And on Thursday, we our captain decided to put in the papers to actually move, to leave port, and it was...
So essentially, he announces what would be the equivalent of a press release. He makes he holds a press conference and says, we're ready to go.
Well, this wasn't even a press conference. It was more of him putting in the official papers.
Oh, I see. Okay. So he
submitted... Port authority there, yeah, to be able to leave port. And it was kind of us just pushing the hand and saying, okay, are we going to be able to go? And, of course, we put in the papers, and... this random complaint gets filed that was by somebody without even a last name.
What was the nature of the complaint?
Saying that our boat wasn't seaworthy.
Right. So that was from the clip that I played as the intro, where the Greek, I guess, whatever the Coast Guard, the equivalent of the Greek Coast Guard, coming up and saying, we have a report that your boat is not seaworthy.
Yep.
You're not leaving.
Right. Exactly. And so this complaint got lodged against us, and that's what kept us in port, because up to then we had done everything that we needed. And when the police got that, for some reason, all of a sudden there was a police order for us not to move. So it was much more heavy than just, you know, having to sit there for a complaint and for inspections. So they got the inspections done.
So they re-inspect the boat, essentially.
Yeah, because they had done it. They had had it surveyed and all of these other things before to make sure that it could get off the port there. But when... we actually went to go set off, and they put the complaint against us. It had to be re-inspected or inspected by the Greek authorities.
At this point, are people suspicious that this is probably...
Oh, yeah.
Right. So
oh, yeah.
We don't know where this complaint is coming from, but right at the moment you say you're going to leave ship, you know, you're going to leave port, you get a complaint filed against you.
Exactly. I mean, I think at some point, I can't remember, because there was a bunch of times that the captain went to the police's office, unfortunately, in different manners. But at one point, I think it might have been during this time that they told him, like, it kind of comes from somebody higher up. Like, there was more people involved in this than, like, a local port authority, you know, complaint case or whatever.
Oh, yeah, when the police are backing up the reinspect order, then
exactly.
That would make sense.
Yeah, and then I think a day or two later, it came out that the complaint was actually lodged against us by an Israeli law firm or something
really?
Like that. Yeah.
God,
I know.
What a surprise.
It was shocking.
I was shocked.
Yeah, we couldn't really believe that they would stoop to such a level, but once again.
Well, I mean, they boarded the ship and attacked. So now that it seems to me that there's a different strategy in place.
Exactly.
They lost the PR war the last time when they killed 9 passengers,
okay.
Which was just unbelievably tragic and brutal. And so now there's this kind of saboteur effort going on, is there not?
Exactly. Yeah. And we had a press conference and some of the most beautiful things were said, you know, it was some of the organizers from each of the different contingents. So there's the French boat, the Greek. We had Alice Walker from our boat.
I have that clip. But yeah.
Yeah. It was really well done. There was a First Nations gentleman from Canada. I'm not exactly sure where. But, you know, somebody said, you know, there was a couple of really great quotes that came out of it. And one of them was that Israel has now outsourced the occupation to Greece and other nations to
wow.
do the dirty work for them. And that's
let's
exactly
stop.
What they
let's
did.
Play the Alice Walker clip for a mm-hmm. minute. Alice Walker was actually on the Audacity of Hope,
yeah.
Was she not? So you had people like Alice Walker and Colonel Ann Wright on your mm-hmm. boat. You're really honored with some serious activists. Let's play the Alice Walker quote, if we could, Sarah.
Again, thank you all for waiting for me. And this is a lot better outcome than I anticipated approaching it this morning.
That is the wrong quote. That was, sorry, I asked Sarah to cue that up. There should be a from Alice Walker there. Do you see that, Sarah? No, maybe I didn't put it in the bin. Anyway, Alice Walker's there. She said something very moving, I thought, also. So I got the spirit of the whole press conference, was people really speaking very eloquently and passionately about why they're here and why they're taking this action.
People that were there, and there's such a unity of just wanting human rights for everybody, wanting peace, peaceful existence, the hope that there could be something like that. And I think that that's what inspired us all and actually created these greater connections. And I hope it really reached across to the people of Gaza, even though we didn't reach them in physicality. I hope we reached them in spirit.
Do you think they heard about it?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure that, there was some, like, of our sites internally, you know, that, like, the Freedom Flotilla 2, witnessgaza.com, they were running pretty up-to-date reports. And then, Facebook always having things about all of the different boats and what was going on with each of them as stuff was being released. And so, yeah, I know that there's a lot of information that got through to people who were looking for it and listening.
Okay, so I interrupted you, but you were so now your captain got arrested at one point. So now you're in port. You've got this kind of bogus reinspect order against you. The police are now involved in this, in reinforcing this. I'm not hearing a lot. If we have time, I'm going to play this report from this guy at PRI that was just ridiculous. What a weenie. He gets mad as hell. Weenie of the Week Award. I hope we can get to it. But that was the only report I heard. But I did manage to hear in preparation for this interview that your captain got arrested. So what happened? So you guys are locked in port. How does your captain get arrested?
That was the Thursday after we arrived. A lot of different boats were kind of, trying to figure out where they sat with things, getting everything ready together. People were on a little bit different timelines, it seemed, and so boats were at different levels of completion.
And readiness?
At that point, yeah. And everybody was just kind of testing the waters in different ways. And so I'm trying to think of what happened in what order, but every time a boat tried to move from any of the different nations, they got an order put against them for whatever reason, with this kind of coming down more and more and it looking like we're going to have very little chance of actually leaving port, we decided as a group and our captain, our brave captain.
What's his name?
John Klusmeier.
He's an American.
He is an American, yep. And he was actually on the first boat to Gaza back in 2008 that made it through.
Wow.
He was the captain on that one. Yeah, so it was
brave
a pleasure
guy.
Working with him, yes. And so we decided to go for it anyway, even with the police order. And so we left dock. We did a press conference. We said, we're taking off.
Right on.
We expected. Yeah, And
what are you feeling at that moment?
It was amazing. I mean, it was nice just to move,
you're right.
Boats are supposed to move, and they're
right.
not supposed to sit in a dock. And
right.
so that in itself was thrilling. And just thinking, that we're making the attempt. We are here to go to Gaza. That's what we all came in for, and that is what we were all focused on.
Right.
Right. And so yeah, we left port, and we actually got further than we thought. We all thought we'd get about 20 feet or so. So after, 10 minutes, we were like, okay, we're making a move. Okay, let's see what happens, and I think the excitement was building. People were, kind of watching out, seeing what's going on. All of a sudden, a Coast Guard boat comes up and, pulls in front of us, gives us the hand sign to slow down and starts talking to our captain about the things that you put in your clip, the seaworthiness of the vessel, captain, your papers are not in order, you must turn back, you're endangering the lives of your passengers. And then we didn't turn back. We sat there for a while because we were asking him about the papers and, why this has happened the way it had, because they had done the inspection, and I think for 5 days or so, you're supposed to give this back in like 24 or 48 hours or something. We still hadn't heard anything from them. So as far as we knew,
you're good to go.
Yeah, there's nothing keeping us,
right.
except for this false police thing that was even claimed to be a false complaint,
oh my God.
So we go, and when we didn't turn around, they actually had commandos come and board the ship.
I saw a clip of commandos. Yeah, coming. They come with guns. I mean, this is serious stuff. Yeah.
That's what pissed me off is we had even, Anne Wright, I think, had said, you know, we are unarmed. Do you believe that we're peaceful, or do you believe we're nonviolent? Mm-hmm. And the captain of the Coast Guard said yes. And then they bring these commandos that come and point guns at us.
Right. And that's got to scare you, given the history of something like that.
Yeah. And not only that, but at first, I honestly was questioning whether they were Israeli. That was my first thought was, wow, are they really in that big of a collusion?
Yes.
But they are, but maybe.
Not so openly.
Yeah.
Not so. So he gets arrested. How long? So they get on board. They take your captain off. They arrest him. How long?
They actually did not board us.
They didn't board.
We sat for a while and we talked.
That's an interesting point to
exactly.
note. That they were probably under orders not to board the ships because of what happened.
Oh, yeah. Well, they talked to us a long time, and I think that, yeah, it would have looked really bad for them having armed commandos come on board in Greek waters, keeping us there illegally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, blockading us in so that we can't go and break a blockade.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's the lengths to which resources were spent, time was spent to
stop a peaceful
yes,
flotilla
to
of
slander
boats
and stuff.
Slander, yes.
You know, it was.
We're speaking to Erin DeRamus. She's back from an incredibly important, exciting, and somewhat thwarted attempt to get a peaceful flotilla to break the blockade Israel has in Gaza. It's a fascinating story. If there's time, I'm going to play a clip from my Mattis L. Weenie of the Week interviewing Colonel Anne Wright. This guy was just, like, obviously paid to make everybody look bad. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. This is Matt as Hell in America. We'll be right back.
I am going to Gaza because my government has failed. It has failed us. It has failed to understand or to care about the Gazan people.
That was Alice Walker, author, an American activist, on board the Audacity of Hope, which was part of a peaceful flotilla that was on its way to Gaza. That was during a press conference when she was declaring that she feels that her government has failed to live up to the principles that she thinks and wants her country to stand for. And I would agree with her. We're talking to Erin DeRamus. She's back from her trip to Gaza, telling us the story of a somewhat thwarted story, but I get the feeling that people aren't giving up and they're still activated. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ. This is Matt as Hell in America. So we were talking about, you get there, you get this false order. They keep all the boats in port. They say your ship isn't seaworthy. The captain takes off anyway. You guys get about 10 minutes out. You're stopped by the Greek police. The commandos move in at a certain point, and then your captain is arrested. They don't board the boat, so how do they arrest him?
Well, so at that point, you know, the argument was for us to return to the port. And because two other ships had been sabotaged, one in the Greek ports and one in the Turkish ports, the Irish ship and the Turkish and the Greek, Norwegian, and Swedish ship.
It had its propeller cut, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, it had some line to the propeller, and then some part of the propeller's shaft was bent, or right. I'm not sure. There's video of it online, and they were both done in very similar manner. It was obviously organized and perpetrated by the same people, which
right.
I'm guessing was Israelis, but could have been U.S.
Yeah.
You know, could have been Greek. Who knows at this point? But so with that happening, you know, our captain made a good, very good point saying we're not safe there. You know, we may be sabotaged.
Mm.
We need to get out of this port. You know, what we're trying to do is obviously not going to happen if we sit there. And so eventually, I don't think a lot of us were up there. I wasn't up there when the whole back and forth happened, but it was agreed that we would return to another port and that our papers would be in order. Because that's the thing that the Coast Guard person kept saying, too, is, oh, you'll sail tomorrow. Come back
right,
to port.
Right, right. It's always the papers.
Yeah,
the papers
exactly.
on ride, the
just
papers,
get
whatever
your papers
it is. Whatever
in order,
yeah.
And you can leave tomorrow, you
yeah.
know? Sure, just come on in.
Yeah, right.
And so, anyway. So I think for things not to escalate, the captain made a decision to return to another port. And it was a military encampment of some type.
Some kind of military port.
Yeah, some type of military port. And so at this point, they pull our boat in, and the crew is being detained on the boat, and the captain got taken away by the authorities, and that's where they arrested him.
Okay. So now he, how long is he held before he's released?
Oh, that was another, oh my gosh. So we left on Thursday. He was held Thursday through Tuesday was when his hearing was and his subsequent release. Throughout that entire time, for I think the first 3 days, they had him in a holding cell that had, it was just concrete tile with one bench, nothing to sleep on. He wasn't getting food because he wasn't in the prisoner order list, food list, whatever it was. So he was being kept in really harsh conditions, and they hadn't actually had a written, written charges against him. They hadn't actually.
Right, I was going to say, what was he charged with?
So he was charged with, we knew that there would be some repercussions for, you know, breaking a police order, and we figured it'd be misdemeanors, but they actually slapped him with a felony charge of disrupting waterways or traffic, sea traffic or something like that, and endangering the lives of his passengers.
So they hit him pretty hard. They tried to scare him and anybody else who might try the same thing.
Oh, yeah. I think that they looked at anything that they could have possibly charged him with and did it. And so he was in those conditions for 3 days. Then he got shuffled around a couple times. We called our embassy. We had actually gone to our embassy to tell them what we were doing, see if they could offer any help, which, of course, you know, talking heads and no support whatsoever. When he got imprisoned, we called the emergency line 3 days in a row, but it was 4th of July weekend. Nobody responded. Nobody got back to us.
Wow.
They didn't help him at all. And then finally, I think Tuesday morning before his hearing, the lady, Susan Brandeis, who's the consulate person there, finally came to visit him, you know, after he'd been in prison for 4 days at that point.
And so he does finally get out. We're closing in on time, but I want to talk a little bit about your assessment of the trip. Do you consider it a success? What's next for this effort? Will you be a part of it? Let us know. Where are you at with some of these things?
I think it was a success in different ways than we had anticipated.
No ships got out of port, though, correct?
Well, a couple of ships. One of the French ships got out from a Corsican port, I think a week or about 2 weeks ago now. Another French ship broke through a couple of days ago I'm trying to think now of all the different reports that have come out. The Greek ship, the Giuliano, it had been okayed to travel to another port, but every time it travels, it has like boats and I think a helicopter at one point escorting it to make sure it doesn't go anywhere else. The Canadian boat tried to break out.
All right, we have 1 minute. I want to get your assessment. I'm sorry, I derailed you.
Yeah, my assessment, you know, so I think that it was successful in that it brought more awareness to certain things, and I think it really exposed the system in a very open-ended way where people are really, I hope, questioning what is actually going on, because this is disgusting.
I agree.
The government working against the people, and that's what we saw all over Greece. The people are saying one thing, the government's doing another again and again, and even as Americans, you know, we were threatened to be arrested coming back if we had anything to do with this. They tried at every different level to deter us from having any participation in this at all, and they're vetoing, you know, they want to veto the statehood for Palestine when it comes up for a vote. It's disgusting.
Aaron DeRamus, thank you so much for your courage. Thanks so much for doing what you do. I hope you will come back and keep us posted on your activism.